This is the official EFL podcast.
Hello and welcome again to the official EFL podcast, where previewing and reviewing the best of the match action across the EFL and its competitions. On this edition of the show, the main focus will be on a crucial match in the Sky Bet Championship, second place Leeds United taking on third place Sheffield United at Elland Road. We'll be speaking to two players who played for both teams. Firstly though, we're speaking to a Sky Bet League 2 striker, who's earned his first call up to the Republic of Ireland national side at the age of 30. Newport County's Padraic O'Mahon, who joins us on the line now. Padraic, can you just sum up your emotions of when you got that call up and what it meant to you?
It was probably, well, it wasn't probably, it is the best moment of my footballing career. You dream of playing for your country. It's the biggest honour you can have, really. And, you know, when I got the phone call to say that I was in the squad, you know, I was obviously delighted. You know, it was obviously the provisional squad, so still, I'm just hoping that I will be in it. I know I am playing at the lowest kind of level compared to any of the rest of the players, so it might be a good chance it might be me left out of it. But, you know, it still will go down as one of the best moments ever, you know, to see your name read out and to have manager talking about you in such good kind of light, kind of shows that the form I've been in has been really good.
Just tell me sort of about the process. How did the call come about? Were you aware of anything beforehand that you had a chance of making the squad, or did it just come out of the blue?
There had been chat at home on a couple of radio stations and stuff like that about me being called up after the FA Cup run, and you know, when I was scoring against all those teams that I did in the FA Cup, so there was chat about it. But at the same time, kind of in my head, you still don't really, well, not that you don't, you're hoping for it, but you're not expecting it. You know, you're hoping that everyone is right, but you don't want to get your hopes up about it as well at the same time. And I found out early in the week, I had a phone call. We had a day off, and I woke up to quite a few missed calls from the manager, and he said he had sent me a message saying, "Ring me ASAP." That was the Newport manager, and I was kind of thinking in my head, "What have I done wrong? I haven't done anything wrong, have I?" And then he just, when I rang him, he told me, "Congratulations! I've got really good news. You're in the Irish squad for the upcoming game." So yeah, I was delighted, obviously, to hear it, but then I had to keep it quiet for a few days because it hadn't been publicly announced, so I could only tell my direct family, told my fiance and my mum and dad and brothers, and then I had to keep everything quiet for the rest of the week. And it was quite hard to do that because it is the best moment of my career so far, so I didn't want to keep it quiet. I wanted everybody to know, you know, because it was such a proud moment.
And of course, it's more than 10 years since you played for the under-21s. Did you ever feel that you would get this chance in your career? Because, let's face it, when people get into the 30s, it's not often they're making the debuts for the national side, is it?
I never gave up. I did think it had gone past, but I was always going to give everything I could to potentially do get called up. As I said, look, it's just unbelievable. It is the best honour you can ever have as a footballer, or I think in anything, really, if you represent your country as any sport. You know, it's unbelievable. So I hadn't given up. I was always going to keep going and going, but I did think it had passed by. But now it's made me hungrier than ever, and I want to do everything I can to make sure I'm in the final squad and hopefully, you know, make my debut.
And to get the call up as well from such a legendary Ireland manager in Mick McCarthy, who I'm sure you grew up watching his sides, you know, for example, in the 2002 World Cup finals. Does that make it that little bit extra special that you're playing for someone who is so well renowned as a Republic of Ireland manager?
Yeah, I think so. The thing is, I'm old enough to remember when he came in as well. First, I think it was 97. He took over around that time, and that's when you know, Robbie Keane started breaking through, Damien Duff. You know, so to be able to, you know, to be called up by the manager, Mick McCarthy, is brilliant. You look, he was so successful with us in the 2002 World Cup. It was obviously a really, really good World Cup for us, and obviously he had the kind of the golden era as well for Ireland, with, I suppose, Robbie Keane coming through, Damien Duff coming through, and all those really good youngsters. And yeah, now, and Robbie Keane is involved as one of his assistants as well, though. So that'd be, it'd be brilliant to be, you know, able to work with the likes of those people, and try and learn for them, because, you know, I'm still open to learning everything, and I'm just hoping that, as I said, yeah, I do get a chance to show what I can do.
The phrase like a journey is overused so much these days, but you really have been on a journey in terms of your career. You know, I've come from Ireland, from Shamrock, then to Sligo, then to the Portuguese League, and then four EFL clubs in the National League club, and now you're representing the Republic of Ireland. It really has been a journey, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. It's been a tough one. You know, I still believe I can play a lot higher as well. And when I came from Portugal to Accrington, probably the biggest downfall I had was I was such an honest player that I'd work hard for the team and do a job for the team. And I ended up playing quite a bit as a winger, in a certain formation that I was working back to help the fullback out. And that kind of happened for 3 or 4 years, really. I never really had a sustained run as a striker until I went to Grimsby, when I'd always been a striker throughout my career, you know, and then obviously things kind of took off at Grimsby, you know, but I would still really enjoy the times I had at Morecambe and Accrington, even though I wasn't playing, because I was happy to be playing every week, be it as a winger, be it anywhere, you know, but I probably should have been a bit more selfish and been a bit more adamant that I wanted to play as a striker. Maybe it affected me in the long term, but I'm happy to have had the journey I've had. And as I said, yeah, I still think I can play higher. So it's just a case of keeping my head down and working as hard as I can and trying to do the best I can for the rest of my career.
And let's just focus on that journey now. Can you just tell us how you go from being a player for Sligo Rovers straight to the Portuguese Premier League? How does that sort of move come about for those who aren't aware of how your career has panned out?
I was playing in the Premier League in Ireland and quite a lot of goals at Sligo Rovers, and there was a Portuguese fellow who played with us, and he just said to me one day, you know, have you ever thought of playing abroad, kind of thing? And I was like, yeah, of course, like I've ambitions to play whatever is the highest level. And that was kind of it. He got injured and he was out for the rest of the season, and that was quite early, and he went back to Portugal, and then we played in the semi-final of the cup against Shamrock Rovers, and I scored 2 goals in it. We won 2-1, and basically after the game, someone came over and introduced me to this fella who was the sporting director of that club in Paços de Ferreira in Portugal, and they put a bid in for me and they wanted to sign me, and kind of all came from there, really. It was just happened quite quick. But yeah, it was. I'll be honest, I had never heard of the club before.
Was that something that excited you at the time, the fact that it was going into the unknown, I suppose?
Well, when I say it happened quick, them trying to sign me happened really quick for me. We played the Friday night, one, and then they were playing the next night. So I watched them on TV. They were playing Sporting Lisbon in the league and beat Sporting Lisbon 1-0. So straight away, there was like alarm bells in my head going, they can't be a bad side, you know, because everyone knows Sporting Lisbon. Everyone knows Benfica, Sporting Lisbon, Braga and Porto, you know, the big teams there. And when they beat Sporting Lisbon, I was in my head thinking, this is a great opportunity, you know, you can't turn this down. And then it happened then. And it was an unbelievable experience to go over there and play. It was tough being away from everybody. It was tough learning a new language. But on the football side, I really enjoyed it. I just didn't play as much as I wanted there, and I thought I should have played a bit more, and I probably should have played a bit more, but I was being kept out of the team by, you know, good players. But yeah, obviously I went over there, we got to the cup final over there, Benfica beat us 1-0, and we qualified for the Europa League. But it was a fantastic season and a great experience to be involved in, I think.
And of course, then after that experience, you then came to England for the first time into the EFL. What was it like to then experience the English league system for the first time?
If I'm being honest with you, I think it was a bit ignorant towards it. I thought, I probably initially thought it was going to be easier with regard you know, settling in and stuff like that. But it wasn't as easy as that. To be honest with you, I had to come back, get a car sorted, and try sort out somewhere to live. And obviously, because I was only on loan, it was time to do the right thing as well. And you know, it was the first year was tough. You know, the club was a fantastic club with regards everything that people wanted to do, everything they could for you. But then in the meantime, we had a couple of change of management in between, because John Coleman had just left to go to Rochdale. So it was, the first year was difficult, but then the rest of it was fine. Once I was settled, everything was all right, and I got better and better. And then I became more accustomed to the kind of style of play, the way the team played, the way the league was so difficult with the 46 games, you know, and every game is, you know, the thing is, there are no easy games in the Football League. Everybody can beat everybody, and it's not just one of those kind of sayings that, you know, happens every now and again. Genuinely, if you look at the results the other night in League Two, that just proves it. You know, everybody literally beat everybody. The form book was true out the window. So, but it's been a brilliant kind of journey altogether. And I'm very thankful that Accrington, especially in England, gave me that chance.
Did Accrington at the time show you how big the EFL is and how relentless the season is and how well supported that the clubs are in the EFL? Did that experience sort of shock you maybe at the time when you were coming over from Portugal?
Yeah, completely. You know, the support is one thing. I think at the time as well, then you have teams who come up from the conference who Crawley were the team at the time who were putting big money in behind it, and as the years went on then as well, you have Fleetwood doing it as well. And obviously they're investing the money really, really well. You know, signing good players and taking players from higher levels down to that level, because the money is obviously really good at those clubs. And then I see how hard it is, how many big clubs have been in League 2, League 1, even the Conference over the last kind of 7-8 years, you know, playing the likes of Portsmouth in League 2 when they were, you know, they'd won the FA Cup not long before that. So yeah, it is relentless. So, you know, you're more accustomed to it now. But as for a younger player coming in, I know from my own experience, even though I was 22 when I came into it, but it was still it was new to me at that time, because when you played in Ireland, it was every Friday night or a Saturday night you played. There wasn't that many midweek games, but then that had its own issues as well, because there was only two or three of the teams that were full-time, but the rest of them were training part-time, so you got used to that. But yeah, it is a relentless kind of Football League, is relentless, and that's why, you know, it's so well supported as well, because every team has a dream of you know, making that big step up, doing what Burton Albion did, you know, going from League 2 into the Championship in a couple of seasons or three seasons, whatever it was. And I think every team has that dream.
And for you personally, do you have that dream? You look at, there's so many players to draw inspiration from, I suppose, from your point of view, with the likes of, you know, Ricky Lambert, you look at Jamie Vardy, and now like the likes of Glenn Murray, who have all played in the lower leagues and then gone up to the Premier League. So, I mean, it really can give you that grounding, can't it, to be a top player and even, as a result, even play international football, perhaps?
Yeah, completely. Look, the thing is, you know, when you play at the lower level, and the difference between League One and League Two, and probably between the Championship and League One, is not massive. Between the, you know, if you're playing in a good side, again, on any given day, anyone could beat anybody from either one of the leagues. You see the FA Cup results all the time, you know, and it's just the consistency level, and that's where, you know, if you're in a team who's playing really well and creating chances as a striker, you know, you expect to score goals. Looking, and I'm no different than that. If I'm playing the team who's creating a lot of chances, I'll score goals. You know, I'll score more chances than I kind of miss, which is a good trait to have as a striker. But the players you mentioned are the same as that. So yeah, I still, you know, as I said, I still dream of moving up the leagues. And, you know, whether that's, hopefully it's with Newport, but you just never know what's around the corner, I suppose. And you just want to do whatever is the best you can do. But at the minute, it's kind of, I'm taking it one game at a time. You know, it's terrible cliche, but I am, because every game could literally be the game changer for you, or such what it is, but you never know when it could finish. It could finish very quickly.
But your call-up really does showcase that there is that talent there in the likes of Sky Bet League 1 and 2 of players who can step up into a higher level.
Yeah, and it's the same with the lads who've been called up as well from League 1 to the Irish squad, James Collins and Ronan Curtis, you know, and they're really good players as well. And throughout the league, there are other really good players as well from Ireland playing, you know, in and it's not just Ireland, it's every country that's represented. It is a very, very, they are very good leagues and well-supported leagues as well. You know, I only have to look at the teams and some of the teams in the Championship and League One to see the attendances they get. And even, you know, down to League Two, I think we played Notts County a few weeks ago on a Tuesday night, and we're 7,000 or 8,000 at it or something like that. So that kind of shows you what the support is like. And, you know, I think when teams pick momentum up, you know, the support can kind of get there. And look at the size of Sunderland, who were Premier League 2 years ago, and now they're in League One, but they're playing in Wembley in a week or two time, and there's 40,000 of them going to be there. So, you know, it is a really well supported, I think all football in England is really well supported, and long may it continue as well.
And going back to your call-up itself, what will it mean to you personally if you get the chance to wear that green jersey?
Oh, it'd be the best thing that, you know, obviously, I love my fiance very much, but the football, you know, it will be one of the best moments of my life. Until we get married in the summer, then that will probably be the best moment of my life. But until then, if I play for Ireland, look, that's how much, that's what it means. And she knows that it means a lot to me as well to play for Ireland. And it's something you just, as I said, you dream about it. And I've honestly dreamt about this since I remember that my first memory of Irish football or Ireland is watching Alan McLaughlin score the goal to get to the World Cup in 94. Well, he was in 93 against Northern Ireland, but for the World Cup in America in 94. And that's genuinely my first memory. And I remember staying up late to watch Ireland beat Italy 1-0 when Ray Houghton scored. And they're the things that you want to, you know, you want to play for your country because of moments like that. Robbie Keane scoring against Germany. You know, it can name out loads and loads of it. And it's just, it would be the best moment of my career by an absolute distance. And if I ended up getting a few caps or whatever, the first one would never be beaten, I don't think in terms of how proud I would be and what it would mean to myself and my family.
And of course, it's a massive credit to the way you've played for Newport this season, scoring some such high profile goals as well in the FA Cup. I mean, just talk us through those sort of moments. You talked to Pep Guardiola, didn't you, after the Man City match, and he even complimented you, didn't he?
Yeah, I want, from a selfish point of view, I want everyone else to kind of score one goal each in the rest of the FA Cup, so I finish top scorer in it, because, you know, that would be a brilliant achievement. And it's just, I didn't want it to end, if I'm being honest with you. It was an unbelievable experience, you know, playing against, you know, we started off against the Met Police, and four rounds later, it was, you know, Manchester City. So no disrespect to the Met Police, because, to be fair, the two games we probably shouldn't have won was probably the Met Police and Wrexham at home, or Wrexham in the first game. But the difference, like, you know, to go from playing the Met Police to play Man City was, if you had told Met Police that day they'll beat Middlesbrough and Leicester in the next couple of rounds, they would have probably laughed at you and said not a chance, because we were poor that day. But we're better when we're being the underdogs. And that's, you know, we were the underdogs throughout the rest of it. When we played Wrexham in the replay, we obviously got a little bit of a helping hand with the referee making the decision to send off one of their players, you know, which I still think was the right decision from them. But we had the upper hand then after that. And then we deservedly beat Leicester and beat Middlesbrough. So, you know, to be involved in those games and be involved in those wins was brilliant. And to score in every one of them topped it off as well.
And finally from me, how big a season would it be for you if you somehow clawed back those points and ended up finishing in the top seven in the playoffs on top of all you've been through with those big moments in the FA Cup?
Oh yeah, that would be brilliant. That would be an unbelievable finish to the season. It's asking a lot at the minute. But look, we can only keep going as much as we can until it's mathematically impossible for us to actually, you know, get there. But we will do everything we can to do that. And hopefully we can go on that big mad run at the end of the season, because someone always does it. So fingers crossed it's us.
Padraig, thank you very much for your time and good luck with the rest of the season.
No problem. Thanks very much.
The official EFL podcast. The best reaction to all the match action.
Newport County striker Padraig O'Mahon speaking to me there about his call-up to the Republic of Ireland national squad. Now, let's turn the attention to Leeds United versus Sheffield United, second versus third in the Skybet Championship this weekend on Saturday afternoon. One man who knows just what it's like to play in this match for both sides is Brian Dean. Brian joins us on the line now. Brian, first of all, how good is it to see both your former sides doing so well in the Skybet Championship this season, second and third?
No, absolutely. I mean, it's been too long since Yorkshire teams figured at the top of the division looking to get promoted. I think that the Premiership has missed a big Yorkshire presence, and I think both Sheffield United and Leeds United would do the Premier League proud if they managed to make the jump.
What is it like to see both the managers' styles? Because they're not very similar in terms of how they go about their own business, are they? Both of them have come to the clubs in different ways. Both of them have got different sort of histories, haven't they?
I think both managers really have come to the club at the right time. And I'll go through it one at a time. I think from Sheffield United's point of view, they have needed for a long time somebody who understands the identity of the club and knows what the fans want to watch. I think for quite a few years, you know, Sheffield United has had, you know, the style of football hasn't really suited the kind of the way out progressively that the fans and the club needs to be. I think Chris Wilder's come in and he's been a breath of fresh air, you know, even down to the formation of how they play, the tempo, you know, and obviously Chris is a local lad, so he has a vested interest in the fact that a lot of people in the area will know that Chris knows a lot about the club. He will have known what the fans will want to watch on a Saturday. And he's brought the right kind of football to the party. If I go on to Leeds, you know, Leeds is another huge club who have really suffered with not having the kind of manager at the club who is big enough for the club. No, so they've had different managers have come in, and I think with Bielsa coming in, he's a world-class manager who the fans like to identify their club with. It might not be somebody local, but what he brings is a wealth of knowledge and respect. And if you look at the team who were underperforming before he was at the club, he's actually got those players, those same players from last year, playing a fantastic type of football. And they've been fantastic to watch this year. You know, the pressing, the tempo, and the consistency really has been fantastic for the fans and for the city of Leeds.
Just explain to us how big this fixture is. You've played this fixture in the Premier League. Just explain how big a match a Yorkshire derby, Sheffield United versus Leeds United, is.
It's simple. It's huge. Obviously, you've got the Sheffield derby, but the Leeds one is the direct biggest derby for both teams, I think. And it's usually produced some really good games over the years. Certainly, I've been involved in a few. I know what it's like. It's a real intimidating atmosphere for the opposition, a real sort of like cauldron of noise. So it's a game that, you know, it's not for the faint-hearted either. And I've been on the receiving end of victories and defeats at both clubs. You know, it's not nice when you lose in that game.
Just tell me what the atmosphere will be like in Elland Road on Saturday with this fixture being so just big in general anyway, but with so much at stake?
Okay, so you got two against three. I went down to watch Leeds versus Derby and I watched West Brom visit Elland Road, and the atmosphere was amazing when I went to that game. To watch the game on television against West Brom was, again, fantastic. But I think you're on another level when you look at the proximity of the two clubs. You look at where what 3 points is going to mean in that game. I think it's going to be one of the best atmospheres in the whole of the country. And it'll be a packed house. I'm hoping that it will be the game of football that is deserved by the fact that of the fixture. It's just really set up really well to be a fantastic game.
And does the winner of this match, are they the ones that then become the favourites to go up automatically, do you believe?
That's a tough one. I think there's still a few twists and turns. I think you are looking at any two from three. And obviously, psychologically, whoever wins this game, if Leeds win the game, they'll have done the double over Sheffield United. So it's a massive, from their point of view, they've beaten their biggest rival. You take heart from that victory. And in the same way, you know, Sheffield United come there and they win well. You know, they've then got momentum as well. So I think you could be right. It's gonna prove to be a very big game.
And just coming back to you and your careers at both clubs, you played at both in the EFL and the Premier League, of course. Can you just tell me, first of all, your best memories of playing for Leeds United, first of all?
Best memory for Leeds United's got to be probably the one standout moment, if I were to put it on its own, would be the goal I scored against Tottenham to qualify us for the UEFA Cup, where I picked the ball up in our half and just continued and ran and ran. And it was between ourselves and Tottenham to qualify for that spot. And getting a draw down there meant that we qualified. So that's probably my, the one moment that really makes me smile about my time at Leeds. You know, it was a fantastic time to be a player at Leeds. We had a great squad, really good team spirit. Just a fantastic time for me, physically, mentally and everything. From Sheffield United, from my point of view with Sheffield United now, I've got, you know, there are several times where I can look on with a lot of fondness. Now, I scored a double against Liverpool, where I scored a goal from 40 yards. There's the two goals I scored against Manchester United in the opening fixture of the Premier League, scoring the first Premier League goal. So there's so many, promotions. There's been so many different memories and sensations that I had at both clubs. It's just been, in some ways, we were fortunate to have each other, both myself and the clubs. And to have that journey together, and also, the fondness that a lot of that is remembered with the fans as well. It's just great memories for me personally.
And you mentioned there that obviously you scored the first Premier League goal for Sheffield United. How does that sort of feel for you in terms of being that, well, that trivia question, I suppose?
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, it's part of, I suppose, the personal legacy that I've got in football. And yeah, it's fun always to look back at the beginning of the season. Everybody says, you scored the first goal. I'm glad, because also there were so many good centre forwards at that time. And I managed to score before the likes of Alan Shearer, Ian Wright, David Hirst, Teddy Sheringham, Alan Smith. Some really good forwards playing at the time. Les Ferdinand, and there I am.
Like you say, some magnificent strikers there. And in terms of both clubs, again, your connection with both clubs, you came back to both clubs, didn't you, in terms of your career after playing there. Well, just explain that connection for you. Obviously, you're a Yorkshire lad yourself, but, how much do both clubs mean to you personally?
Well, I'd start with Sheffield United, obviously. It's where I'm quite synonymous. That's where my career took off at Sheffield United. I scored 30 goals in the first season. I was there, I scored 24 in the second, two promotions. It you know, it means a lot to me as a club. You know, I'm fondly remembered down there. Probably played some of my best individual achievements down there in terms of match-winning performances were at Sheffield United. Obviously, I left under some circumstances. I left on both occasions were a little bit clouded, not from my own point of view, but, you know, the fans always welcomed me back, and, you know, I'm fondly remembered down there. So it's always a great place for me to go back. I still have a lot of friends down there. I still enjoy going to watch the games. If you talk about Leeds, you know, I'm a Leeds boy. I live in the town. You know, I had two good spells there. I had a spell where, you know, I left Sheffield United. You know, I had to fight my way into popularity, I think, after the first season I had there, which I did do. That all ended well. And then in the second spell, came back at the end of my career and helped to stabilise the club. And again, you know, the fans, you know, I see people I know every day, you know, Leeds fans, I see Leeds fans, you know, I know what it means to them to have a successful club. So it's just been great to be a part of both of those clubs' histories. And to me, it means everything, because I think I'm always going to be based in and around Leeds. So I know what it's going to mean if they get promoted. You know, the town itself will take, the city itself will take off. And I think it's very important that they do go up.
And looking as well to you as well now, in terms of what you're doing now, obviously you took off to Norway, didn't you, in terms of to start your managerial career. Is that something which you're now looking to go back into in terms of management? Is that something you want to do? Or just give us a sort of like a flavour of what's next for Brian Dean?
Well, no, I mean, if I'm honest, you know, I've drawn a line under the management. I went over to Norway and I kind of did it. I didn't want to tell too many people what I was doing because I needed to know for myself if I could do it and if I wanted to do it. And I was outside of my comfort zone and I went out there. Team I went to had the lowest budget in the league, and in the first season we managed to stay in the top division. You know, I managed to change the culture. Second season we finished eighth, got to the semi-final of the cup, and at that point I felt like it was the right time to try and come back to England and find a club, and I did that. And I couldn't, you know, I came back, I couldn't even get an interview, and, you know, I think it was wholly disappointing. And I think that from that point of view, after a couple of years, I kind of felt that it was the right thing to draw a line under it, because, you know, it's hard enough getting an interview. If you get that job and then, you know, you're looking over your shoulder, then I just think it wouldn't be fair to myself. I've got a lot to offer in the game, and I've had a CV, a plain CV that few could match. So it was disappointing to not even get an opportunity of an interview in several situations, and I just think I don't want that stress, so I drew a line under it. I'm quite happy to say I'm not going to be pursuing it. And, you know, in some ways, yeah, I've lost out, but I think also, you know, football loses out when they don't present opportunities for people, especially with my background. You know, I went and I played in Europe and at Benfica. You know, I've got a lot to offer, but it wasn't to be, and I'm quite content now in terms of not chasing that and pursuing that, because it didn't want me, it spat me out, and I don't really want to go back for more. So my focus now is more on individual projects I have. I have some projects that take me abroad. Some of them involve football. I think what does appeal to me is mentoring young players, and that means making sure that they have a balanced understanding of what happens when they come into football, and some of the things that I had to go through and other people my age had to go through in terms of advisors and agents and so on. I feel it's very important that young players need to have the right people looking after them. So that's something that I do kind of on an individual basis. I'm not an agent, but I do like to liaise and help guide parents and so on. So, and that's something that I do because I want to give something back, you know, and it's always good to make sure that parents and young professionals understand what the process is, and it should be as transparent as possible.
Like you said, giving young players an education is obviously very, very important. Coming back to the match itself, finally, can you just give us a prediction for the game? How do you see this one playing out?
Very tight game. Two very good sides. Difference in formations. Both like to play with a high tempo type of football. It's really that tight. It's going to be really hard to call, actually. I think that it might be, if it's not a draw, it'll be decided by the odd goal. That's how close the teams are, and it can go either way.
Brian Dean, thank you very much for your time.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
EFL Fixtures in Focus.
And that Leeds United versus Sheffield United match is our fixture in focus for the Sky Bet Championship this week. Joining us to talk about that match and our other featured games in Sky Bet League 1 and 2 are former Leeds United and Sheffield United midfielder Michael Brown and Sky Sports commentator Gary Weaver. First of all, starting with you, Michael, just how big a match is this one? Two of your former sides in action, Sheffield United versus Leeds United.
Well, now with obviously both clubs doing so well, I mean, fantastic. Well, who would have said at the start of the year you'd have had second and third place in the Yorkshire Derby? It's always been a big fixture, but this is the one now everybody's been talking about. I'm delighted that I'm going to be there. I'm looking forward to the game, and it could be really a decider on who gets promotion. It's that big, and a sellout, so sold out Elland Road. It'll be a brilliant atmosphere, and you know, hopefully a great game.
Contrasting styles between both the managers, but they've really got the most out of their team this season, haven't they?
They certainly have. A lot being mentioned. Obviously, Bielsa's used a lot of the existing players, been able to turn the club around. The style, the pressing, the dynamics that he brings. It's great to watch that style of football. And then when you look at Sheffield United, it's a totally different model that Chris Wilder's been able to develop with the way he uses his wing-backs and his outside central defenders. It's been there for all to see. It's amazing how they can still get in the box and deliver crosses from central defence, the amount of distance they cover. So, you know, both for a fantastic game. I think Sheffield United has strengthened depth a little bit better, so that will help them. But mention styles and energetic, both managers very much liked and are representing the club very well.
And which players do you think will be pivotal if their side's going to take 3 points on Saturday afternoon?
Well, you look, you see Hernandez is getting on the goal sheet. I'm a big fan of Phillips at the moment. You know, the amount of games he's played from a young player. Jack Harrison's coming on now, doing well as a young player on loan from Manchester City. And we go over to, you know, to the Sheffield United side. Billy Sharp, his goal record. Will he use him? Gary Medine getting suspended. He's managed to change the forward line a little bit with McGoldrick, etc. So, again, it's... It's going to be a great battle in the middle of the park. Will it be Fleck? I'm sure it will be. Does he use Duffy? So, yeah, great options for both managers.
And, of course, I mean, you've played for both sides. What is it like for you personally? What would it be like to play in a fixture like this? I'm guessing you must be wishing you weren't retired looking at a game like this now.
This would be a game I would be looking forward to. The atmosphere, it's a big, high-pressure game. And the energy and the amount, of, you know, the teams are going to both go for it. That's what will be impressive. There'll be no sort of getting behind the ball and defending it out. We're going to know that both managers will try and win the game. So, yeah, it's a brilliant atmosphere. That's what you play football for, with an opportunity to go in the Premier League, play a big stadium on a big stage, live on TV, everybody watching. And so, yeah, it's a great atmosphere. It'll be, I'm sure it'll be competitive and physical, which I would have liked. And, you know, cool heads and a bit of quality might win it on the day.
And how big an advantage would it be for the winning side going into the final stage of the season now?
You just look at the running. Both got to go to Birmingham. Nottingham Forest is there. There's different fixtures for the clubs. But there's some tough ones. And on paper, looks as a there were some easier ones. You look at Norwich now, I think they've got a slight easier running. And obviously, they're not playing each other, i.e. Leeds, Sheffield United. So you would say Norwich would edge it. But if someone can win this game, I'm sure it'll be massive towards the end of the season. That could be the difference.
Skybet League One.
Gary, over to you now. You're covering another Yorkshire derby in League One this time. Doncaster against Barnsley. Just how big a match is this one, considering both sides' current situations?
Yeah, well, I think with Doncaster at the moment, it's no wins in five, but they do feel unbeatable at home at the moment, Doncaster. And Barnsley, they've just been immense this season. If you speak to any manager in League One, they always talk about Barnsley and the admiration they've got for them this season. So I think with Barnsley, with the way they play, the high press that they operate with, they fancy themselves anyway. They go looking for teams home and away. But Doncaster, as I say, feel a bit unbeatable at home. And they gave Barnsley a good game at Oakwell. So it's set up for a brilliant game. I mean, Doncaster's trying to hold on to sixth spot. They've got the likes of Peterborough and Blackpool coming behind them. Barnsley aren't really looking over their shoulders at the moment. If you speak to Daniel Stendhal, he's looking up a losing town, trying to get to losing. But of course, Barnsley have got their destiny in their own hands now in terms of a top two place after the recent results, the draw against Sunderland, and of course then Sunderland drop points at Wickham as well. So Barnsley will fancy the chances, I'd imagine, of top two. And as I say, Daniel Stendhal has got his eyes on top spot. He's not giving up on hunting down Luton.
Coming back to you, Michael, when you're like Doncaster, they haven't won in the last five matches. How difficult is it to come out of that form at this stage of the season?
It is difficult, but that's some of the pressures now. You look at all the leagues, who wants to grab that playoff place? Who can cement their way in? It's the same in the Championship. People are all fighting for those places. The pressure starts to build now, and teams don't get those runs. You know, you often see a club coming from 10th or 11th putting pressure on and that late run towards the playoff. So, yeah, it's a huge game. Again, as I say, so much at stake, but Barnsley are doing very, very well, and it'll be a tough game.
And Gary, coming back to you, how impressed, you sort of mentioned it earlier, but how impressed have you been by Barnsley's form so far this season?
They are honestly one of the best teams to watch. We did them against Southend a couple of weeks ago when they went down to 10 men, Barnsley, when Jacob Brown was sent off. You wouldn't have known it. And just the way they play the football, I mean, I think they were quite visionary in the way that they sat down as a board and thought, what kind of football do we want now? They did what Huddersfield did when they got David Wagner in. What kind of football do we want to play? They thought counter-press, that seems to work. So they drew up a list of candidates. Daniel Stendhal was actually second on that list. And they went to get Daniel, brought him in the summer, and he's just embraced the EFL. He's embraced the town of Barnsley, everything about it, and the playing style. It's just wonderful to watch. And as I say, a gauge for me is every time you speak to another manager in League One, they always talk about Barnsley and how well they play and how well they're doing.
But how difficult is it, though, Gary, in terms of looking at the table now for Barnsley? You look at the quality of the teams behind them, the big clubs behind them in terms of Sunderland, Portsmouth and Charlton. It really is relentless for them, isn't it, this running?
It is relentless, but the way they play is relentless. I saw Charlton last week when they beat Portsmouth under Lee Bowyer, doing a brilliant job there. You look at Sunderland, I think that was a big point for Barnsley at home to Sunderland at Oakwell, because it keeps their destiny in their own hands. Sunderland have got a game in hand behind them, but Barnsley are 4 points clear of them. So I think with Barnsley, it's just about keeping that energy up, and you think they've lost Kiefer Moore as well, and also they got Cameron McGee now suspended at the moment, and Jacob Brown after his red card against Southend. But it's just pedal to the floor at the moment for Barnsley, and I can't really see that changing. Famous last words.
Sky Bet League 2.
And now to another game that you're covering on Monday, Gary, in Mansfield against Lincoln. That's another crucial promotion clash, this one, isn't it? For different reasons for both sides.
Yeah, it is. I mean, Mansfield had an important away point at Crawley on Tuesday, because away from home, they've been struggling in the last few games. So that was important to turn that round and go back into the top three, go ahead of MK Dons. But with Lincoln coming to town, Lincoln are such a powerful team, and it's not just about their power. If you look at the goals they scored against Oldham during the week, they can craft some really good goals. So it's not just about the long ball for Danny Cowley. He's trying to develop that team. He's trying to bring the style a little bit further forward in terms of them playing football at the moment. There always seems a long ball team. They can mix it, but it's a huge game for Mansfield in particular, I would say, to try and stay in those top three positions.
Yeah, coming back to you, Michael, how difficult is it for Mansfield in their current position in third place, with MK Dons breathing down their necks in fourth and level on points with them, of course?
Well, very, very difficult. You know, you look at Mansfield, they had spent a lot of money. They go to Port Vale, who were in a relegation battle. They lose that one away. I didn't think they'd particularly done very, very well. They managed to recover a little bit, get a draw against Crawley. It's pressure on. This is now you find out what your players have got and, you know, who can find that little bit of difference, that little bit of quality and that, you know, the desire to make sure you get through. This is what it's for. This is what the playoff system is in, and that's why we all love it. It gives everyone that opportunity. But, you know, it's another great league. Very, very tight, as you've mentioned. You know, level on points with MK Dons, Tranmere not too far behind. Just really tight at the top. So 10-point gap between them and Lincoln City. So I'm not sure they'll be able to get past Lincoln, but it's important that they try and keep the pressure on.
Yeah, Gary, Michael mentioned the 10-point gap that Lincoln have got, that the 10 points clear of MK Dons and Mansfield. But how crucial is it for them to get over the line and secure that promotion as fast as possible?
Well, if you speak to Danny Cowley, he's not taking anything for granted at all. He he has said we need to keep on the front foot because he thinks that maybe a team finishing in third, the likes of Mansfield, MK Dons, Tranmere aren't too far behind, but he's looking at maybe them getting towards 89, 90 points. So he doesn't want to be looking over his shoulder in the final few weeks of the season. And Lincoln Train, the way they play, it's full throttle, and he'll have them in there from now all the way over through the weekend until that game. And the message is, keep that pedal to the floor. Don't give those behind a chance to overhaul us.
It looks like another action-packed weekend ahead in the EFL, and of course it always seems like that at this stage of the season. Thank you very much both for your time, and that's it for us this week. Join us again next time when we'll be back with even more EFL action.
The official EFL podcast, the best reaction to all the match action, available every week.